This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You're on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. I am Fiona, co-host today with Macca. Macca, who is our next guest?
Our next guest is James Newbury. James is the state member for Brighton and also the Shadow Minister for Equality. Good morning, James.
Good morning, both. Thank you so much for having me today.
How are you?
Great. It's been a very busy 3 weeks.
Hasn't it?
We've had 3 weeks of Parliament and a federal election in between. So one of the big ones for me is we've had our budget estimates where all of the ministers come into the Parliament and are interrogated or grilled, however you want to describe it. And we've had Parliament around that and a federal election. So it's been a very busy 3 weeks.
So in all that, just before we get into some of that, James, tell us about yourself. Tell us what led you to stand for election. And tell our listeners something about yourself that perhaps they don't know.
I, in a previous life, worked for the Liberal Party in Canberra. I became disillusioned with it. This issue's been written about and my concerns and the reason why I left Canberra has been written about, but I've never talked about it publicly. I left Canberra when Tony Abbott won an election. I mean, can you believe it? Someone leaves when we win government. and came to Victoria, worked for a former premier until after that election, and then left politics. And I didn't think that I would actually be where I am now. I worked in the financial services industry, and then the member for Brighton called me to tell me that she was retiring, and she was very persuasive in talking to me about why I needed to consider running. So I'd left this life, and now I'm back in it. So I think quite a few things that I've just told you people aren't aware of with me, and here I am now.
So why were you disillusioned? Why did you bail on Tony?
I mean, this as I said, has been written about. So I'm not saying something that that probably hasn't been written about before. I didn't agree with where things were going, to be completely honest with you. And on top of that, I wanted to move back to Victoria and have kids, which I've since done. But I felt that the best thing for me to do was put my feet forward in terms of walking and doing something else, and that's what I did.
So that that period, James, of you worked as a staffer.
Yeah,
correct?
I ran the federal parliament for the Liberal Party, so okay. I worked very closely with Albo for about five okay. years running the parliament.
Okay. So, in terms of engagement, with different members, both sides of the aisle. Although now, I suppose we have to say three sides of the aisle or four sides of the aisle. What's the biggest challenge there?
I was there running the parliament with Albo when we had a hung parliament. And he's spoken about this before. It is actually very difficult to run a tight parliament. There's a lot of things that need to happen every day that require conversations and require agreement. And there's actually a lot of agreement that goes on behind the scenes to make our parliament run. And during that hung parliament period when Julia Gillard was Prime Minister, talking to a lot of people and a lot of characters in terms of getting some of the procedural stuff done, let alone the big issues, it becomes difficult. And you can see in the Senate over time that that's absolutely the case. Mm. When there's less certainty in the parliament, things are harder to do. And I think that's a challenge.
Well, the funny thing is there seemed to be more bills passed while Julia Gillard had a hung parliament than at other times. Why do you think that was?
I think it requires extra effort. It requires extra effort, and it probably requires some of the people involved to make a commitment to a particular side of the aisle. Now, it doesn't have to necessarily be formal, but I think that people do need to fall, because at the end of the day, you're voting yes or no. There's no other option. It's a yes or a no. That you do need people to kind of lean one way more often than not. Communication is key. I think that you always need to be communicating with people. And after running that federal parliament for the Liberal Party, I moved to Victoria and did the same. The Liberal Party effectively was running a parliament in Victoria of a very similar nature, where we had a fellow called, I actually don't even want to say his name on air. Do I have to? The former member for Frankston. How about I just say that? We had a difficult...
He had an abiding interest in hardware, didn't he?
how about we move on? I didn't say his name on air, did I? You didn't trick me into it.
I've forgotten it anyway.
Good. I then had to help run the parliament here, and it requires a lot more communication. As I said, it does require people to, you know, to try and lean in one way or the other to make sure that parliament's run, because that, I mean, at the end of the day, it's important that we do things and we not get stuck in a quagmire.
Now, this week, of course, you know, we've seen the federal election result. We don't know the result in McNamara yet.
No.
I expect we will today, but on Tuesday, your party decided to bin the Finn.
Mm. Bin the Finn.
Bin the Finn. Mm. So, Bernie Finn, what's the terminology? He's expelled. He's expelled from the Parliamentary Liberal Party.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's going to happen, James? He says he's going to stand for pre-selection. He's not expelled from the Liberal Party, is he? Mm.
So, the Liberal Party makes a separate decision to the party room. So party room made decision one, and then the party makes decision two in their time. I mean, there's an administrative process, as you would imagine, for that. And, Bernie would have the opportunity to not renew his membership as well. So there are options available to him. As you said, we expelled Bernie this week.
Bin the Finn. So why?
In 2018, can I take a step back?
Sure.
In 2018, Victoria sent a really strong message. And it's a message that I certainly heard coming in as a new member. Clearly on Saturday, Victoria sent a message to the Federal Liberal Party that they hadn't heard in 2018. And I think that's on them. I think that was a mistake, a very big mistake. And the behaviour of people over the last term showed that they hadn't heard that message. There was behaviour that was not right, and the handling of that behaviour was also not right. And I think the result on the weekend absolutely showed that Victorians wouldn't accept that, not just Victoria, other states as well. It's a message that we did hear in 2018, and our leader, Matthew Guy, has always been very strong on accepting that, and I have as well. And he wanted to make clear when he was leader that we needed to behave in a way that people would expect of their elected politicians. Because, you know, when you're elected, it's not a joke. It's not an opportunity to, you know, live the high life. You are there figuratively, because 45,000 people, or in my seat, 62,000 in total, have lifted you onto their shoulders. You're there to represent them. And your behaviour has to be clean. It has to be appropriate at all times. It doesn't mean we don't make mistakes. But Bernie showed over a long period of time, a very long period of time, that his behaviour was, in my view, inappropriate. And the party room clearly took a view that his behaviour wasn't as would be expected of us as a team. And our team has said under Matthew Guy that in terms of behaviour, we need to have appropriate behaviour. And in terms of values of policy, we need to be representative of the community.
Mm. So, because what seems to me that has been a problem in politics over the last few years is the blending of ideological agendas with politics. So in actual fact, some candidates just don't represent their constituents well because they've got their own agenda that's going on. In these kind of cases, that seems to be what's happening.
Do
you see that as an issue, and do you think that's something that we need to change?
Sure, sure. And I think that the election results, both in 2018 and on the weekend, showed that.
Mm.
I see the election results in Victoria of the weekend as an extension of the 2018 results. And I think your point's absolutely right. You not only have to be a part of your community, because if you're not part of your community, I mean, what's your purpose? You're there as their representative.
Mm.
And I think you saw swings, not only a lot of talk obviously is about the Liberal Party vote, but in Labor seats as well. There's no doubt that there is an expectation in the community, from a very large proportion of the community, that they want people who are part of the community. They want people who represent their values.
Mm.
And I think that they're now willing to switch their vote, which is probably something they haven't done to the extent they have before. They're willing to do it now.
Mm.
So I think it's incumbent on political parties, if they want to be majority political parties, to absolutely accept that.
Mm, I think that's why Tony Abbott lost his seat too. He had his own agenda and didn't represent his community with the yes vote.
It's impossible to see what happened with Tony and not think that that was overwhelmingly personal. Well,
that was the start, wasn't clearly. It, James? That was the start of, you know, that swing in his seat, and then
Warringah, yeah.
You know, Warringah, and then what followed. In terms of, you know, so Bernie's gone, you're saying that, you know, you're pitching, you know, 6 months of the state election.
Mm.
You're speaking on a queer radio station. You're the shadow minister for equality.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I asked for this portfolio, just for the record.
Yes.
I asked for this portfolio. It's something I care a lot about.
So in terms of, you know, the community that we're broadcasting to predominantly, although about half our audience are not of our community, they're allies.
Mm.
I think it would be fair to say that there's been some concern I've expressed and other people have expressed of the position that your party has taken on some of the legislative proposals and bills the government's put forward. We've been disappointed that, you know, equality to us means one thing. There's only one thing that equality means, and that means equality.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's always been delivered, James. I think, you know, we can talk about the National Party. That's a different kettle of fish, and I'm not going to ask you about them. But, you know, the Parliamentary Liberal Party in Victoria has not supported a lot of the initiatives that our community really want and that the government has legislated for. So can you talk to that?
Yeah, look, for a start, I've been a member for 3 and a bit years. And one thing I can say to you is, I have done everything within my power to be a voice for exactly what you're talking about. Not just when I became the shadow, for my time in Parliament. I mean, I spoke on gay conversion as a backbencher.
And passionately, I acknowledge that you did.
Because I'm very well aware of that issue. You know, I've spoken about this. I've had friends who have been deeply broken by conversion therapy, and it's something I care a lot about. So at all times, I've tried to be a voice for the issue of equality as a member for my community, and I will always be that. In fact, I think, without going into any detail, I think that things that have been written probably have reinforced how passionately I've stood up on my side for that, and being made the shadow for equality. I'm not the shadow of equality or you know, the equality. I'm shadow for equality. So I have tried very hard to always be a very, very strong voice. And under Matthew, I'd say to you, we have absolutely moved as a party. We're not the party of 2018. We're just not. On a number of policy areas, we have moved. I think that we are now very representative of the community at a time when, I don't want to get too political, but there are genuine concerns about the government. So I think that we are in a far different place than we were before 2018.
Do you think, James, you know, and I hear what you're saying, the reality is there's been some very and very unfortunate debates in the Parliament.
Yep.
From your side on some of the issues that we've talked about, whether it's amendments to protect school teachers and kids, conversion therapy. You know, if I can be so bold, the reality is I accept what you're saying, but your party, I don't think, is of the same view. You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Fiona. And I want to thank our next guest, James Newbury, the Shadow Minister for Equality, for coming in and, you know, subjecting himself to our interior. Although a previous Liberal leader, Michael O'Brien, said that we'd put him on the griddle, I think it was. We'd grilled him.
Oh, you grilled him, right.
We grilled him. So what I was asking, James, is, you know, I hear what you say, and I acknowledge that. Your thoughts on equality and what it means and why it's important. I think sometimes your party is not on the same journey as you, and I listen to some of the debates, you know, whether it's around conversion therapy, whether it was around protecting gay students, queer students and teachers. I have some doubts. Can you reassure me, or can you tell me I'm wrong or why I'm wrong?
Well, I can tell you, when it comes to me, you're not going to have a more fierce voice. You're also not going to have a more public voice. And when Bernie Finn spoke out recently, I took the view, I spoke out publicly, I went on the record about his behaviour. That's unusual, frankly, for someone to make comment. I think we are past the time where you can have people in a group who behave wrongly and the group say nothing. I think Victorians now expect you to call out bad behaviour, and that's an absolute assurance you can have from me. If someone behaves poorly, I give you that offer. Give me a call and I will speak out against the bad behaviour.
I can give you a list.
Sure, sure. And I don't think you can ever say that I also, not only don't speak out, but I also speak out from the heart.
Mm.
And I think that's something that politicians don't often do. You know, that's the only commitment I can give you, that I will always speak out. I have always spoken out and I'll continue to speak out. But I very strongly believe that we have moved from, we are a very different party than we were before 2018. Very, very different.
Mm.
Now, James, we've had a couple of messages come in from one of your constituents, particularly Mel Smith.
Oh, I know Mel.
She said you always respond to her emails, so you've earned her respect with that.
Can I tell you a funny thing about that? I made a rule when I got elected that I'd respond to every single constituent personally. And during COVID, that was 300 people a day.
Wow.
And I worked until I slept just responding to people personally. I think that that's one of the things that's missing in politics. And so when Mel says that I email her back, that is absolutely me. No staff included.
Well, she wanted to ask you on air about the role that the women played in the election and what your thoughts are about the women vote and the independents.
I think that the behaviour of some people in the federal team throughout time was totally and utterly unacceptable, and I think that that led to a broad part of the community. I don't like to just say women. I don't think it's right. I know lots of men who didn't accept that behaviour and didn't think that behaviour was right. Not only the behaviour, but frankly, I think the election showed that the response to that behaviour was wrong. So there was behaviour that was inappropriate, and clearly the federal government, then federal government, did not respond as it should. And the broad community, I think, said, not okay, just not okay. But I don't think it's just a woman thing. I think it's just a people thing. People expect appropriate behaviour.
It was the greatest swinging vote was with women during the federal election. I think it showed there was a lot of anger in the community about the way we were ignored and the way we were treated.
Can I tell you, when I heard about... I worked in Parliament House for, I don't know, best part of 10 years federally. When I heard about what happened to Brittany Higgins, I mean, I was in those halls.
Yeah,
I was
that's
in
your those workplace.
It was just totally and utterly unacceptable. And I would have thought that the first thing that you would do as a leader is stand up and not only be moved and shocked, but commit to, you know, fire and brimstone, because, I mean, that can't, that's not just something that should happen in a workplace. It's something that shouldn't happen.
And I think also the Jenkins report being ignored later on as well was very upsetting, I think, for those of us who did march during that time. I was one of those people. I was lucky not to be shot, though. but I think the Liberal Party has got a history of, you know, particularly even we saw in the federal election, of attacking our community, the LGBTI community, the comments by Catherine Deaves and that sort of thing. Does the state...
And also the Liberal candidate for McNamara.
Yes, right. Correct.
You know, it was like there was a ratbag convention and both these people got let out of it.
Can I note the candidate was a candidate against me in my pre-selection.
Yes.
So I think it would be fair to say we don't sit on the same side of the
aisle. She speaks very highly of you.
Well, you know, I was successful in that pre-selection, let's just say that. But in terms of Catherine Deaves, what struck me was the comments were, I mean, they clearly were not in touch with the community more generally, but they were just unkind.
Mm.
They were unkind. And as a community representative, I think that your first obligation is to think about the whole community, how you bring people together and be kind. And those comments were manifestly unkind, I don't think they're representative of the values of people in Australia. And clearly they weren't. Clearly they weren't, because people
they're certainly
spoke
not. I mean, certainly not listening to their to the community in that area, let alone the rest of Australia. But yeah, even the bill that is before Parliament to protect people. Rights not to have transgender people playing sport. I've got a very big heart for sport. It's my area. You know, I think playing sport, particularly team sport, is a human right that we all have.
Yep.
Does the state Victorian Liberal Party speak to the federal Liberal Party on these issues and say that you disagree, or how does it work with the relationship?
As you'd appreciate, they are very separate entities, very, very separate entities. You know, in my seat, I had a federal member of parliament who was a Liberal, so I had an opportunity to talk to my federal member of parliament about issues, and I think he and I had very, very similar views. In terms of Tim Wilson, we had very similar views. So we do have opportunities to speak, but we have no say in what happens. You know, with this issue, one thing that scares me is we're talking about kids.
Exactly.
Mm.
And I just don't care about the differences. What I care about is we're talking about kids.
Mm.
And I've got two kids, and I know what unkindness does to kids. And there's no doubt in my experience that people of this community, that the LGBTIQ community, mental health is an issue in terms of people, especially young people, on their journey. And being unkind to children in that community is manifestly it's just manifestly wrong.
Mm.
And that's something I think that's been forgotten in this debate.
Can I just, and I know Fiona wants, there's some school
yes,
related questions.
Schools.
I just, James, I, you know, if for me, and as I've said to you on many occasions off air, I'm about the policy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually not interested in the politics.
Mm-hmm.
I see things through a queer lens. And I think the state Liberal Party has, if I had to characterise this, and you know, people are going to beat me up on this, but so be it. I think there's been poor progress in terms of LGBTQI issues. We've seen the state government has been very upfront about their equality agenda and legislating to support that. And when that legislation comes to the parliament, I understand, you know, oppositions want to move amendments and have debates. I understand that. But the reality is the legislation that has gone forward has passed, but it has passed despite the reluctant support of your party. And I want to see queer issues being bipartisan issues, and I don't see that happening. That's what concerns me, not with you, but with your party. So how do you get the members of your party that aren't full bottle on these issues, that actually don't really understand them and oppose them? You know, we've had shadow equality ministers on the show that clearly were not across the brief. I know you're across the brief. So how do you get your party engaged on these issues?
Well, for the people who don't get the deep background to it, I think from a political perspective, Victoria's said the same thing twice now.
Mm.
So for anybody who was a laggard, you'd say, well, Victoria just didn't say it once. They've now said it twice. So if you don't listen, you're a fool, frankly. But on policy, there are times where bills might have 10 things in them. One good thing or two good things or three good things, but they might have 9 good things, but they might have a 10th thing which is difficult or is problematic. And it, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, it's a very binary decision. It's either a yes or no. And sometimes you've got to weigh up the 10 things and say, is that one thing that's bad insurmountable, yes or no? So I hear what you're saying. All I can tell you is that I will be and have been as strong as a public voice as I can be. And I think after the weekend, there's no doubt that for anybody who was wavering, Victoria has been clear twice.
Okay. And you've heard the message.
Well, I think the Victorian Liberal Party heard it the first time. I think the feds ignored it, frankly. I think they ignored it.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the federal Victorian MPs heard it, some of the Liberal Victorian MPs, because we had some, I mean, look, Katie Allen, Tim Wilson, I mean, these people were very progressive people.
Well, Katie crossed the floor.
Very
progressive. In one instance, Tim Wilson couldn't because he was in cabinet.
But yeah, I mean, you know these people privately. Their views were very, they are progressive people.
Yeah.
I think that some of the Victorian Liberal MPs absolutely heard the messages 2018, but the broader did not, and that was an enormous mistake for them in not realising that they weren't representative of the community.
Fiona,
going back to talking about kids, I've got a 5-year-old, and
am I allowed to ask, boy, girl?
Boy,
right?
And he was 6 months old when the plebiscite was happening, and I was very deeply hurt by the commentary around our kids being the stolen generation and, you know, all that sort of thing that happened during that campaign. And since then, I've been very much on the activism trail in this area. And one issue I'm looking at the moment is schools and particularly around the funding for religious chaplains in schools. There seems to be a discrimination in that funding where you have to be religious in order to work as a chaplain in schools. I know that the Labor government in Victoria have created their own funding to mean that schools don't have to do it that way. Mm-hmm. What's the Liberal Party's view on that sort of...
I'm absolutely happy to take away what the feds are going to do in that space moving forward and talk to them about it. I'm more than happy to take that away and talk to the feds about that, because I think that in social policy more generally, we need to absolutely hear the message of the election, and this is this is an important issue that you've raised, and I'm more than happy to talk to the federal team, the new federal team when it's set up, about some of these issues.
Yeah, I'll certainly be interested in the new budgeting around that from the federal Labor government now. But there seems to be that ideological thing that
And that point, I think, is a fair one in terms of when it comes to policy that affects children. I think that the Liberal Party, sometimes the federal government especially, the former federal government, didn't understand that we're talking about kids first. You know, policy was, I think, and sometimes ideological value-based policy to them was more forefront than kids. And when you see everything through the lens of kids first, I think your policy you know, the way you define policy, the way you write policy is different, if that's foremost in your mind.
Can I ask, James, with regard to the state and education in Victoria, do you support the provision of, and I'll call it a counselling program, I won't call it a chaplaincy program, because a chaplain infers that it has some sort of belief, religious base, right? Do you support a program that allows non-religious counselling of that nature within the state system? So that, you know, I understand people of faith and their kids, you know, whether they're at independent schools or state schools, want there to be a service provided that gives some support to their kids. And if that's faith-based for them, that's fine.
Can I tell you, throughout COVID, when I deal with constituent matters, I really take it to heart. When throughout COVID, the impact on mental health of kids was beyond anything I could ever have imagined, and especially to young girls, I spoke out very, very strongly on the impact of things like self-harm to young girls. And in fact, when I started talking about it, the government effectively said I was making it up and started attacking me in Parliament over it. But clearly, as time went on, we saw that was such an extraordinary, overwhelming issue for young people. And I was talking to a lot of young people who were self-harming. Can I say, we can never do enough to help them. If that means providing them with services in schools, we will never, frankly speaking, we will never have enough services for people to help them. All we can do is give them as much as we possibly can. And I think COVID has shown that it is going to take years to help young people get through what they've gone through, years. And all the health experts are saying that. I know that there's a report coming out on Monday. I don't want to preempt it into the mental health impact on the LGBTI community. Mm. And I think that's going to be quite an important report. We can't provide young people with enough services, to answer your question.
So it shouldn't be, you know, that I'm not asking you to comment on the federal system, but the state system, you know, you're a state member of parliament, that, you know, that those services predominantly in the past have been through organisations that have a religious focus. Other organisations that want to provide those services need to be given the same opportunities. Do you agree with that?
Are you talking about a particular program specifically?
Look,
or
I think in terms of chaplaincy in schools, you have a state education system where the federal government pays for chaplains.
They have to go through a third-party provider, which in Australia is generally a religious organisation that will only employ.
So you've got federal government providing the funding for the program in state schools, because the federal government doesn't run any schools. So you've got a third-party organisation or organisations that are predominantly religious-based. So if you wanted to do counselling in schools, you go through those organisations, you actually don't get through the gate because, you're not a person of faith.
Yeah, so the $60 million a year that's allocated to funding, essentially, religious chaplains in schools, and even a qualified secular social worker can't access the funding.
So if you're saying to me, James, do I think in terms of the federal parliament $60 million, do I think that it should be limited to one thing, or that people who have merit who could provide a service should be eligible to apply? The answer is yes. Mm. How's that for clear?
Yeah, and the state government, the state government can override that too by providing their own funding.
And I know, I mean, I've spoken about more generally, you know, the state government provided a program for senior schools in terms of counselling and support. And I've spoken out very strongly. In fact, I've commented on Dan's social media about needing to extend that to all kids rather than just a particular subset of age group. So as my I do everything by general principle, and the general principle is we need to provide more. And if that means extending a service into other service providers who can add value, well, why would you say no? A
couple of final questions, James, and we've actually given you some extra time because you know, we wanted
you
to
grilled me for longer.
Oh, yeah. Yes, right.
We put you on the grill and we've really sizzled.
We've gone off simmer. So, state elections in November, 6 months away. What announcements can we expect from you and your party around LGBTQI issues? What would you like to achieve? What would you, as a policy, can you give us some clue?
I would love to give you clues on what we're going to do. I mean, I'm also the environment shadow, so in both of my spaces, I've got stuff, and I've got some exciting stuff. Just before the federal election, we committed to 2030 and 2050 in terms of environment. And also...
What about we commit to net zero discrimination by 2023?
Why do we have to wait till then?
Well, till net zero discrimination...
Why are we
December
waiting
2022?
Then? Why are we waiting? It should
well, exactly.
Shouldn't it have been yesterday?
Exactly. Yes.
Maybe the point should be... Just is net zero discrimination by yesterday. I think that makes a far clearer point. So,
and can we create a hashtag?
Yes.
Well, I think the yesterday thing is probably clearer. And in terms of this space, I was very, very outspoken on the legal service being provided here for the community. And a little birdie tells me, Macca, that you may have been a supporter of that behind the scenes. I don't want to put you on the grill and embarrass you. But I hear that you might have helped that policy come along.
Good policy is good policy.
Yeah, well...
And it needs to be recognised. Doesn't matter where it comes from.
Do you know, can I say on that point, it's funny, in the federal system, both sides do give each other a bit of a thank you or acknowledgement when they come up with policy, but it is very, very tribal here. So if you come up with a good policy, like we did with the legal stuff... You know, Foley came out on day one and whacked me, and then they adopted it, and you know, it's almost as if I didn't exist. But I've done that with other areas too, in terms of sexual assault reporting. Chanel Contos and I spoke out very strongly on that. Banning the Nazi flag as a sign of hate. David Southwick, the man for Caulfield, and I spoke out first on that. We've done some really incredible stuff, and when you consider we're in opposition. We've moved the government, but the legal service is something that it's been a passion project of mine for years.
Now, I've got one final question, then Fiona has one.
Mm-hmm.
So, with these announcements that you're going to make and that you're thinking of, where are you going to make them?
Oh, is that a plug for here, is it?
Well, there is a precedent.
Okay, fair enough. When the next announcement... for the LGBTQ community, we're going to do it here. How about
that? Fantastic.
How's that for a commitment?
Thank you. Can we lock in a date?
Oh, come on. I can't even work out what day of the week it is over the last few weeks. Yeah. I'm just kind of looking at my diary every morning, working out what I'm going to do.
Where am I? Who are these people?
Yeah, but you asked for the next one to be here, and that's what will happen.
And sorry, an additional question.
Another commitment?
No. Well, yes, it is actually. We've struggled in the past.
Yeah.
To get someone from the state opposition on a regular basis.
Yeah.
We guarantee to make two segments a month, minimum.
Right.
Available for your folk, for your party.
Yeah.
To come here and speak to our community. And I'm going to entrust the organising of that between you and I.
Sure. So are you saying that I've passed the test?
To you have.
And you want to hear from me more? That's what I'm
hearing.
Walk
across the coals.
It can either be yourself, James, or another shadow minister, but you and I will work together on this to making sure that that happens.
Sure.
At least once a month.
I can tell you the only Saturday commitment I have long standing is I do Elwood Community Market once a month. I'm there for the whole day.
Well,
so as long as it's not on
it
that
then.
Day,
well,
I will
might,
move heaven
and
earth.
Perhaps we might be able to do a broadcast from there. There you
I
go.
Love doing, I love
the
doing my
market.
I've done,
there you go, Fiona.
Well, I've done my Elwood Community Market for about 5 years. So
it's a great market.
Have you seen me there?
I run the Fitzroy Market, but they do a very similar market at Elwood.
So Karen's done most of Brighton. You've done the Elwood Market.
I've done. I'm Brighton East, Elwood and Hampton. I've done it all.
There you go, Fiona.
I think all my questions have been answered. My questions were mostly around schools, but we did get another message from Mel, your mate.
Yes.
She said you have to live 50 kilometres outside of Melbourne to find a Liberal seat.
A federal
Liberal seat. How does that make you feel going into the state election?
you get elected for one term. And I think one of the problem with politicians is they think otherwise. This is all parties. I was elected for one term. I'm putting my hand up for a second term. You never take anything for granted. You put your best self forward and you hope people would vote for you.
He said, Mel says he's okay for a Liberal.
He sounds nice like John Posito. And yeah. John, as you know, is a regular guest.
Thank you, James.
I know it's always difficult to make the time. I appreciate you've made the time. I've loved it. And we will be hearing from either yourself or another shadow minister, even Matt. You know, Matt needs to come on again. But thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate you coming in.
Of course. I loved it. I had a good time.
Sitting on our grill.
It's cathartic.
Yeah. You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9 with Macca and Fiona. Just quickly, I want to thank James Newbury for coming in. Also thanking him for making a commitment to ensuring we have a member of the state opposition at least once a month for two segments. And James and I will work on that together. Also that the next announcement in the LGBTQI policy space by the opposition will be made here on Saturday Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great to have James in and to speak to him. I still think there's a long way to go, but he's made commitments. Let's see them delivered.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.